Right, here we go again. We're back with another weekly helping of Mint Sauce Chronicles. I hope everyone's in good health. The format is simple. I'm going to say it again because I still get emails. People saying I can't log in and they're trying to log in on Rumble or Odyssey or Podomatic. I have to ask myself sometimes. Yeah,
I've done it when I subscribe to it.
Yeah, so you're one of those. The format is simple. We're trying to release four shows a month. Members get full podcasts. At sheepfam.co.uk, not Podomatic or Rumble or Odyssey or YouTube. They also get the ability to download the podcast. Non-members get part one, which is generally about an hour plus. All new shows are released on Saturdays, but it's a good idea to sign up to the newsletter because we do let people know when a new release has come out. Podcasts are always at sheepfam.co.uk, regardless of any other place. They're always at sheepfam.co.uk. We also put part one on Podomatic, as I said. They send them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, Google, Apple, if you're from Yorkshire, or Apple if you're from America. And that's it, really. It's not that difficult, to be honest with you. You can be a member if you want. If you don't want to be a member, don't be a member. Subscribing to the website isn't signing up for a membership. It's just subscribing for the email. Membership's £2 a month. That's it. It isn't that difficult, to be fair. Thanks for all the comments, emails, comments on YouTube. We do get quite a lot. You know, we're not ever inundated with comments. We must be shadow banned for some strange reason. Can't work out why.
I said last week to comment on YouTube because we do read them, don't we?
Yeah. I try and read as many as I can. But commented on YouTube. But there are times where you put stuff on YouTube and it just disappears, funnily enough.
Well, people have commented that, and they've said, yeah. I put this on a few times and it's vanished.
Into Fairyland, into Google Fairies. It's over, isn't it, really, this tinterweb. And you get quite a few DMs on Instagram.
I forget every week what that means. Yeah, we've also got sheepfam.co.uk Instagram, where I didn't put it on last week, actually. I usually put a picture or something on. It's just, if you're on Instagram, it's the only thing I use it for. I use it for that, for my sculptures, but...
Right.
I don't really use it for what else.
Right, yeah.
Although it has got me watching bloody catwalk videos quite a lot.
Catwalk?
Cat videos.
All right. Videos.
I avoided that whole world of cat videos until Cicely was born. Then I ended up watching them with her.
Yeah.
And now me and a few...
Funny cat videos.
Me and a few on Instagram, like Emma Bridges and Boho Bridges and Dee Dee sends me some and we... exchange cat videos.
Right. They put cucumbers behind them.
Yeah, that whole thing. So through
I tried that with my cats, I just looked at it. They didn't even do it.
Mine did as well.
I were very disappointed. I'm putting them next to toaster as well.
Did you try that as well?
No, I don't even eat toast. I put them next to toaster.
Did it do?
No, I just looked at it. my tabby cat, right? Yeah. Tabby is a great word for Yorkshire because you're not actually having to put a T in front. You don't say tabby. You should just say tabby. It's a name word for Yorkshire people because it's already got a T put there. A bit like twat, really. That's the same thing. You don't say twat. Yeah. You can pronounce both T's as well, which makes you even more Jeffrey Boycott.
Northerners are obsessed with tea as well.
Yeah. Cup of tea. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been down.
People actually think it's grown in Yorkshire, don't they?
I know. I've been to a tea making factory in Sri Lanka where me and Miss went to Sri Lanka.
Is that in Yorkshire?
No, but there's a place called Little England there, right? And it's weird. It's a really strange place because I think it was colonial. I think it was colonized by Yorkshire and Scotland, Yorkshire people and Scottish. And it had a post office and it had this old colonial house there. Right. And it was like, oh, it was weird, man.
Did you have a British tea parlor?
They had a pool room, I think, that dated back to God knows when, and it was still exactly the same. And all waiters had white gloves on and stuff. So they were really old.
What did they do with them?
No, do you know what I mean? It just had that old colour. It still felt like old colonial England.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, no matter how much you look into all this, it might be my slave genes kicking in, but there is something quite comforting with all that stuff, isn't there?
What do you mean?
You just got to shake your head then and think, oh, no. But there is something quite... the established thing, you know, you see all these things. There is something that, because you've been drawn into it for that long, your mind poisoned. There is, you know, serving cups of tea on some nice china bone.
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, it is nice. We've lost a lot of that stuff, haven't we? That's why it was interesting to see them still doing it. I mean, even going back to when I was a kid in Huddersfield, when I worked at the Hilton, We've talked about this before. I don't think on here, but we used to do banquets for like bankers, like 500 people. I was a silver service waiter,
yeah,
with a dicky bow and a waistcoat
topless
and all that stuff. And
with chaps on with your ass out.
You just
one of them parties.
I'm just going to ignore you. No. You just wonder where that world's gone, because you won't see that now. I mean, you might see it in London or whatever in some places, but where did that work go? The queues. The car park at the Hilton, you know, and it was a poshest Hilton. It had a swimming pool.
It was at the time, wasn't it?
And it used to be rammed every night, and now it's just some makeshift. I don't know what it is.
In our village, Chris, if you think right, there were in our village there was the Swan, the Golf House Hotel, the New Inn, the Commercial, then there were the Lower George, Upper George.
Which were going up, they were going directly up towards the moors, weren't they?
Up towards Scammonden. Then there were some small local ones around as well. Right. Wagon and Horses as well, sorry. As well as a bowling club. This is a small village, this, right?
It's very small.
And every weekend, right, more or less every night, the old golf house, which had about, not a massive hotel, 70, 80 rooms, something like that, it were full, right? Full of business people. On a weekend, it were rammed with people going out for meals and stuff like that. We never went to church, but you could hear church bells ringing and people walking up the road to go to church, dressed in the suits and stuff.
We had carnivals in summer.
This were only, again, a small village, right? Not a massive village. You know, I don't know how many, a couple of thousand people maybe eventually lived there, but the Swan pub were always parked, the Wagon and Horses were always parked. All these pubs were all full. Now most of them are closed down. In fact, the Wagon and Horses has turned into an Italian restaurant.
Have they really?
So that's not even a pub anymore.
I mean, that's probably been a pub since God knows when.
Yes, yeah.
And the old golf house next door to where...
We worked there, didn't I? I used to wash up there.
You washed up there. I worked there as a car park attendant.
Yeah.
The fact that it needed a car park attendant...
Tells you how busy it was.
They used to fill the car park and then they'd queue down the road to get...
Yeah.
And I remember because two of my mates' mum worked there. Their granddad owned it, I think. Yeah, he did on it, didn't he? And just thinking about this fact, they used to do like frog's legs and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just gone, hasn't it? I'm not saying frog's legs are posh or whatever, but it was a posh dish and they did that kind of food and they had like loads of chefs in the kitchen all bustling.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
The kitchen were really busy. I mean, I ended up being a night porter there.
Oh, you were? Yeah, you were KP then night porter, weren't you?
Yeah, and being night porter there, I mean... Obviously, you saw loads of different people coming in and out. We're only young, we're only 17 or whatever. Mm. But that were, but again, it were busy. You're talking, Sunday night were probably quietest night. That's probably why they let me do night portering. But it was still busy, you know? It was still
like I said, that Hilton night. Up Henley Top, which is only a short distance away from where we grew up, they'd have 500. I remember them doing banquets for 500 and I'd be silver serving, you know, and I'd get a row of 12 people. You'd get 12
but,
people.
But you think of the local
like
area,
20
right?
waiters doing it.
The guy that did that old golf house owned a building company.
Mm.
Him and his family bought that hotel, right? Mm. I work there. You work there.
Mum worked there.
His mum worked there, right? A lot of my mum's friends work there, right? Yeah. Several of my mum's friends work there. So they employed everybody from the village as well.
Yeah.
That's all gone. Now there's migrants living there.
Is it?
No, they've rented. They were trying to get migrants living there. Now they couldn't because there's some weird rule that they've got to live within a certain distance of the town centre. Wonder why that is. Anyway, so certain distance with the town centre. So, but what they've done is now all the people who like a crackhead, for argument's sake, they've moved all them in. So somebody found one asleep in the greenhouse.
Nice choice, isn't it? Crackhead or a migrant.
Which one do you want?
We're about a cracking migrant.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah,
but all this shit is just this migrant. All this, it's just set up.
And not only that, Chris, within the village, right? There was oddball Granville who mended tellies. There were several mechanics. There were electricians. There were plumbers. There were all the people
remember,
that you needed to live your life.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a proper independent garage there where the
independent garage. Yeah, the haulage company. And what I'm trying to say is, everyone was sort of glad when that went and a big supermarkets opened up and it looked razzmatazz and all this type of stuff. But now looking, I'm saying everybody, I weren't necessarily glad, but a lot of people were happy that these things were changing at the time because it were like the technological move, weren't it, to change it. Well, but I remember my dad saying that places like Tesco's are going to ruin everything. They're going to destroy.
Well, I had a butcher. He had his own butcher's shop, and he said, "I'm getting out now." Most towns had one supermarket, didn't they? If I remember, Huddersfield had a Sainsbury's in town, my mum would go once a month and do a big shop. But then the rest of it was in markets and shops. Yeah. But I remember my dad saying,
"I don't even think it was once a month, Chris."
No, every now and again. But he said, "Well, we used to have a van come round delivering."
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember my dad saying, "I'm getting out now because supermarket's going to fuck it all."
Yeah, and they did. Going to ruin it all. And they
then look what's happened. In fact, they've gone full circle, and now everyone wants farm shops and local butchers.
But again, everybody's shopping local now in local because there were a local baker, there were a local butcher, right? Yeah. All the farmers, the slaughterhouse up the road were supplying the local butcher. It's not local produce, a lot of it, that the farm shops are selling, sadly, whether we like it or not, yeah? A lot of it's coming from way outside where, I keep saying, we're full of green fields here, but these farm shops aren't selling carrots from a field down outside my house, for argument's sake.
But the point is, it's what people are wanting, isn't it? They're wanting that... They want that locality back. It's too.
But
far
it's not
gone,
the same. It's a super. It's even,
and also back then, it was an industry, wasn't it? It was just a genuine industry. No one was sniffing each other's fart, saying how fantastic they were.
They probably were. There probably still were that egotism there, Chris. And there's no doubt that, and certainly people trying to do people. I'm sure there was. However, it was still local, whether we like it or not. Mm. You know, if you broke down in the street in our village, somebody come and push you.
Yeah,
I don't mean physically broke down and crying or out. I'm wondering if your car broke down and needed a bump, because most cars needed a bump.
I did every all the time. I kind of never went. Well, look, windows were held up by a ruler.
Yeah, and these local villages, I don't know if I got onto this, but these local places like that, people live there all the life and the generation after generations now. And I read somewhere it was by a group of psychologists wrote it in Nottingham University, and I forget what it was called now, the book, but anyway, about 10-12 years ago, and they worked out that when they started opening all these universities up in towns, like Huddersfield got a university, so we got this influx of people from all over the place with these pointless grants and for academic courses that didn't mean anything at the end of 3 years, just cost £30,000 to get it. All sounded good because we were all low interest and all this sort of thing, and they never actually paid it off. But somewhere there's a payback. And what they worked out was that 25% or 30% of all students end up living in that area, which doesn't sound that bad, right? They end up staying there within that area. They don't go back home, right? So, but what happens is it breaks down the family unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It destroys the family unit by getting them to migrate to somewhere else. And in the late 70s and 80s, when people going on strike, the miners and the dockers and all this sort of thing, they didn't want businesses that they couldn't control, because it was difficult to control when you had a local community that backed each other. Yeah?
Yeah.
It was difficult to... They needed to split all that up. Mm. So they wanted a migrant workforce. And look what they've got. Two generations down the line. And it's even worse now, because it's not a migrant workforce anymore. It's, somebody sat at home all day. Mm. A sterile workforce, if you like.
It's funny, actually, talking about colleges, because it's almost like you see it in American films, don't you, that they're travelling back home from college, from where they ended up migrating to, if you like. Mm. And it kind of, it's almost like they brought that over here, didn't they?
Yes.
The university thing, when they started, everyone, they gave it for free. Everyone wanted to go to university, then they started charging.
It sounds cool, doesn't it? You go to university, you get, wear one of them stupid fucking hats
also,
at the end of it, and a cape.
Well, and also, a fact, you got people leaving school and colleges, and they don't know what they want to do next, so they just jump at doing that, don't they? My missus is doing a degree now, right? And she's 42. She's doing a degree, an art degree, which she talked about since we first met, just because she wants to do it, whatever. I mean, maybe she'll find a teaching job.
But that's slightly different, isn't it?
No, but what my point was, what she's noticed, being a mature student, because she's working with, you know, a younger end.
Immature student, yeah.
A lot of the courses, it's just fillers at the beginning. I think she was doing something about, she's doing fine art, for crying out loud, and they had to do an entire course about sustainability. So they're interjecting it at the student level, you know.
I think we're telling that.
Programming.
In France, I think with Catherine Amblin, she was saying the same thing. She was going to do a course on something. and they had to do a sustainability course on it. And it was something, I forget what it was, something to do with nursing or something like that. And
I would imagine it's every degree has that sustainability thing put in there. I'll tell you a funny story as well. Lou said to, they were going on a school trip, and obviously they're all like 18, just out of school. And she said, oh, that's exciting. We're going on a trip to a museum. And he went, I've got a girlfriend.
Really?
Is it when you struck in his leg when you said it?
Did she invite him to one of them parties?
Before he even finished the sentence. Oh, this will be nice. I've got a girlfriend.
Yeah. Which piss are you drinking tonight?
I've got a bottle of Bordeaux.
Bordeaux? What happened to them that you got delivered that are clanking? Have they disappeared? They weren't ages ago at all.
Long
that would have taken me about 35 years or something to. and they'd have still been in box. In fact, Lorraine, right? And me and Nick keep saying we're going to have to drink that bottle of wine Lorraine bought you.
Is it red?
No, it's white. Sansay, I'm one of my favourites when I drink, right? And it's still in the fridge.
And
I don't want to open it because I know I won't drink it all and I don't want to waste it. So yeah. I want to open it when. Say Nick's mum and dad. Nick's mum and dad around. Well, you won't drink wine, will you? You'll drink old fucking thinners. So,
life's hard, fatty man. You've got to drown it in summer,
right?
I reckon.
Yeah. Anyway, we will move on because we're going to talk about town centres in a second. Anyway, but thanks for everybody who orders my vitamin C and multivitamins. Yeah. Remember, put the promo code in. I do get emails about that as well. You know, I might get some T-shirts made up. The T-shirts I might get made up is with promo code on and with explaining how what the podcasts are every week. But yeah, use the promo code. I don't know how long the 25 off is going to continue, but at the moment it will. I'll let you know in good time if I'm going to take it down from 25. But there still will be, there'll always be a discount code, but that was a sort of like an opening.
Where are the fat heat health bunker?
The promo code?
No, it's the description. The product.
Everything's in the description. The shortcuts, everything's in there.
Even look there. Because otherwise, why do I get messages on Instagram saying...
I don't know, Chris.
Where's Dumb Shop? It's healthbunker.co.uk.
If you go into Rumble, right, and you go into Odyssey, and you go into Podomatic, and you go into our website, they're all there. Even Gaping Traps.
Have you got my Gaping Gobs on there?
I've had it on there. I'm sure it's still on there. But Gaping Gobs Chris's stuff.
Actually,
yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mentioned
Sheep Farm Block. Yeah, I think I mentioned it last time, Sheep Farm Block.
I mentioned it last time and I sold three, actually, on the Saturday. And just a very brief history of my little Gaping Gob shop. I used to call it, I set it up when I was like 20. I've always liked making sculptures. It's been my dream to be a sculptor, hasn't it? Or a cartoonist or an artist of some form. But I've been wanting to make them sculptures. Anyway, I set up an Etsy account in 2017, I think. I didn't sell one for 2 years. How weird is that? And when it all went to shit in 2020, I sold a few and then it just picked up. And now I sell quite a lot to America. Yeah. It's really weird. But
America as well.
Well, I quit my head chef job, didn't I? And I remember saying to you, I'm just going to throw my existence to the universe and see where it lands. Yeah. And I did a bit of part-time chefing. And then the shitstorm happened, which when COVID hit. In 2020, I started selling a few. And I'm like, that's good. I mean, I used to sell like two or three a month. And I wasn't bothered. I was quite happy that I shifted a couple. Then it just picked up. And then all of a sudden, I don't make a fortune out of it, but I sell quite a few now. I think I've posted to 22 countries last year. Mm. But what I mean is...
So shooting it's not 33?
Well, 22 is a numerology solid number, and it's one of the magic numbers. But what I mean is, was that? I mean, it was luck and a bit of chance that someone saw it, and but you saw one, you get a review, then escalate, and then it gets busier every year. I mean, another weird sculptures. I mean, something I was thinking about the other day as well. When I was younger, when I used to sell them by advertising in a magazine, I'd advertise it 14 times of all things. Remember Charles Fort, the 14? I'd advertise in there with a little advert. Saying, send me a stamped addressed envelope.
And Razzle as well, you did, didn't you?
And I'd send them a brochure out, and then they'd send me an order form back, and then I'd send them a sculpture. So the whole process took about a month or 3 weeks, you know, from the minute someone sent you the stamped addressed envelope to me posting them a brochure with a thingy, and then get anything. Like 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, the patience people had in them days.
Yeah, I know.
It was so few as well.
No, that's not patience. That's what, going back to what we were talking about before. Going back to what we were talking about before, that is how it used to be.
Yeah.
That's how it was. You weren't patient. Everyone looks back now, like World War One. People say, oh, it was very primitive out there. No, they weren't primitive. They were cutting edge. Yeah. At one point, Morse code was the latest iPhone. Now it looks pretty. We might go back to Morse code when it goes Mad Max, but Morse code was cutting edge.
But the interesting thing I noticed as well, right? Going back when I first did it when I was in my 20s, I used to call them tortured souls, living in Yorkshire. Mm. I felt slightly tortured soul. So it fitted, and I nicked it from Clive Barker. Nicked it from Clive Barker from Hellraiser. And then as I got, I thought it was a bit too gothic. So that's why I changed it to Gaping Gobs. So it's killed Gaping Gobs now, and look what we're doing.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's weird?
I don't know. But it's no weirder than that guy saying to you, you're going to be doing something in a few years that...
yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. Did I tell you that weird one I had the other day? I think I told you. I won't go into details, but I was telling Lou about an old workmate of mine who I've not thought about or mentioned for years. And I was just telling her quite a nice, funny story about this person. Who I've not seen for 25 years, something like that. And then the next day, I got a text saying she'd passed away. I've been with Lou now over 15 years. I've never mentioned this person to her. I don't know why I got onto the subject. Mm. We were just talking about it. And then I just got a message off someone I hadn't spoken to since 2008 saying that they'd passed away.
A lot of these things coming up at minute, Chris.
Yeah. Mine have been ramped up this last 2 weeks.
Well, I mean...
My serendipities.
Yeah, a lot of serendipities, but again, a lot of people passing away, sadly. We're witnessing the great exodus, spiritual exodus, whatever, for some reason, whatever it is that the people that are controlling this want rid of these people, and it's certainly happening. I mean, we'll talk about that later on. It might be an hour or two about population rates again, but yeah. But we were talking about but it didn't matter where you were brought up. There was still some kind of they talk more about community when the community now is more of a prison than they did when we were kids and it were never mentioned. And yeah. There were more community then than there is now.
It was a natural community, not a forced, not a forced agenda community like they're trying now.
Can you remember there were a guy?
Who, places still like that, by the way.
There were an old guy who lived up road and who were a milkman called Harold Hurst, right? And he actually went to Oxford. He was a farmer. Right,
did he go?
Wealthy guy, yeah. He went to Cambridge or Oxford. He won it too, Chris. And he was an educated guy, but he was a farmer. It was proper. You'd look at him and you think he's from Yorkshire, right? It's Percy Thrower. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's proper Jeff. I can't say Jeff Boycott, but more of an old. He used to wear rags. His boots were fastened with bail band, as we used to call it, and holes in the bottom of them. You know, and
did he have like 4 cows?
God knows, but he made all his money on the stock market, Chris.
Get out of town, really?
I remember once having a conversation with him in 1980s, and he were devastated, and I was talking to him about some of his investments. So, yeah, I lost quite a bit of money. First time he'd ever really spoke to me about that. Lost quite a bit of money in Black Friday, whatever it was, Black Tuesday, 1987 it'll have been about. Right. I said, well, is that why he cheesed off? He went, no, a couple of my calves have died. He wouldn't even bothered about
it. I never knew that. I just saw him as old Harold who were farmer.
No, quite a bit of brass.
He looked like a stereotypical. He couldn't look any more like a stereotypical.
Well, look, he delivered 3 or 4 crates of milk, right? Old style milk with green top, right?
Yeah.
And he could hardly walk. He was bent over crooked, wasn't he? He was knocking on even when we moved up there. And he probably wasn't that old.
Yeah.
But, anyway.
So you imagine he was delivering raw milk, wasn't he, in them days?
Yes. Yeah. He was delivering that green top with...
Yeah, big thick lump of cream at top.
Top, yeah.
you can't even get that anymore, can you?
No.
Unpasteurized, solid. Well, I used to be a milk boy, so did you.
You couldn't even tip it out. You couldn't tip it out because it was solid. You had to stick a spoon or a knife in to cut through it.
And if you were lucky, crows didn't peck it away to get to the cream.
Yeah, I bet they don't peck away at it now. Yeah, poison. Even crows won't fucking eat it. But
you think when I was a milk boy as well, Fatty, you could get unpasteurized milk. You could get pasteurized, homogenized. How many different kinds of milk were there?
I know.
I mean, I don't even know what that means. What does homogenize?
Well, you could, the boil it, Chris. Homogenizing it means basically the boil it to an inch of its fucking life.
So it's pasteurized then? That's what pasteurizes.
Yeah, well, pasteurizes that and homogenizes it. They're taking out all the nutrients to stop it going off, basically, aren't they?
But I think
by telling you they're killing all the bacteria.
Right. And then there was gold. Do you remember Gold Top? There was a Gold Top.
Gold Top. The Jersey.
It was fucking 90%
that was
cream.
But that was cream. Jersey. Jersey was milk, that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just literally, it was just like the top of the green one, but just solid all the way down.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Where's that gone, Fat?
No goodness.
Where's that world gone?
That world is, if it's not disappeared, it's certainly disappearing.
Someone delivers milk round here, actually, on a milk float.
Yeah. Or an electric teller.
Yeah.
Tesla float.
They never existed before.
Just a wheelbarrow, wasn't it? Yeah. He invented digging cadmium out and using slave labour for it, yeah.
But, imagine and all, when we used to, because you had that milk round before me, then I used to do it. I used to sit on the side of a Ford van and he'd bum down the street with it. I once fell off as well.
Yeah.
Shredded my bloody BMX trousers to bits, cut my knees open, and who is it who did it? Paddy just got out of the van and said, "What are you doing, you stupid twat?" Yeah. Get back on the van.
I was speaking to somebody, one of his mates, and he hadn't been tapped on. And Paddy, I don't believe.
Apparently.
Yeah. We're only just talking about him. Anyway, town centres. You said you saw a video of Huddersfield town centre.
Yeah. Well, I watched, I've forgotten the guy's name now, but it was a video on YouTube, and it was. He walks around town centres that have gone to shit, basically.
Right.
And your young and Jacob told me that Huddersfield's not what it used to be.
No, I can say that. I haven't been into it for years, to be honest with you.
But anyway, he walks around the town centres. I mean, and he's walking around, it's all boarded up, it's decimated.
Yeah.
And it's horrible for me because I used to wander around, obviously, with my mum. And like we were on about before, it used to be a pretty bustling town centre, didn't it?
Well, he went from your local area into town that were like the big world, wasn't it? When you were a kid, you were down at the bus and it went big world, and there were all these big shops and stuff like that that you found, and you got all the trendy gear to go out in when you were 17, 18. Went to local, whatever it was, chemist to buy you, iKarate aftershave.
But when you think, when I left Yorkshire for the second time or third time in like 1995 or something, I think it was, around that time. No, probably 96. And when I left, Huddersfield got better and better and better. And I'm judging this on bars and going out. Got nicer bars, got nicer restaurants and stuff.
I would say, right, and then your view of it getting better was when the university opened up. And that's what I was talking about earlier. There were a massive investment, but basically the university just started buying up all of Huddersfield. Yeah? And they opened loads of bars for students. Now a lot of them bars are closing down because people aren't going out. Going back to what we were saying, where have all the people gone? What do they do now? They just stay at home staring at the screen or screens, multiple Black Mirror screens, and just ordering, I'll order a Domino's. Oh, yeah, 10 pints of Coke with it, please. And a vape.
I get a Domino's every now and again, to be fair. I'm saying that. I don't remember last time I ever got one. I get a curry. I get a takeaway curry about once a month.
I just lit barbecue tonight. It's not raining and it's not absolutely freezing your balearics off. So I thought I'm going to light barbecue because my favourite type of food. So I got my good charcoal out with no toxic shit on it and marinated some chicken.
Tastes like paraffin.
Yeah, so it doesn't taste like paraffin or paraquat. But going back to town centres, Chris, I mean, we're talking of town centres here now and city centres. Everywhere you go, that's what they're doing. They're just destroying everything, the very fabric. And you can see it's so clear what's happening. Now, I do think at times the wheels are falling off what they're doing as well because the lies are becoming so obvious, hence why they've got to use people like Jeremy Vine, Mariana Spring, O'Brien, people like this, even Lorraine and people like, not Lorraine, our mate Lorraine, Lorraine Kelly.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about in part two if we get...
Yeah, it's all delivered nicely, isn't it, with a cup of coffee, but they're selling the same shit.
Yes.
Selling the same crap, aren't they? Those talk shows where they got woolly jumpers and coffees with them.
Yeah.
They literally, it switches
Jeremy
from
Kyle
the news,
type thing, just destroying.
Switches from news to that, but they're actually selling the same nonsense.
I didn't realise this the other day, that Mariana Spring and Jeremy Kyle come from Sutton, both the same town.
Jeremy Vine?
Vine, sorry, not Kyle. Yeah.
That's that other twat.
But I mean, is it much different from those fentanyl type cities in America?
Yeah. Oh, just quickly, I went to Leeds last time I were up to, when we did that last thing. On my way back down, because I used to live in Leeds for a couple of years, I thought I'd have a quick wander around town centre because I had half an hour. And they built a big shopping centre and all the other shops all around it have just shut down and the shopping centre were empty. Again, Leeds was a banging city, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it looked like the centre had been decimated there.
Yeah. Well, it's decimated everywhere. You can't drive into Leeds now. So restaurants you used to be able to go to in the centre of Leeds, there's no parking. You can't park there.
Do you know, it's funny you say that, Vic, because that guy who did that video, and I apologise, I forgot his name. He seemed like a really nice lad. He wandered around Huddersfield, and it started off with the fact that he couldn't actually get into Huddersfield town to park.
Yeah.
So is that part of the... I mean, and in Cambridge even, there's the Grafton Centre, which is one end of Cambridge, and it's so expensive to park there. A couple of hours, 6 or 7 quid or something.
Yeah.
And then the shopping centre's just... All the shops are empty.
Yeah.
There's no point going. You can't afford to go.
Well, that's... I remember, going back into Huddersfield, Jewry Market, where his dad had his butcher's shop.
It was packed,
I remember
wasn't it?
On that main road, though, they didn't have double yellows on there, and then all of a sudden they put double yellows on there, so you couldn't park on the main road. So people were getting tickets, but it stopped people coming in. I mean, Dad used to say a traffic ward, so you realise...
Yeah, he did, destroying, yeah, I remember.
And local councils used to walk around, and he said to them, you put your double yellows there. This was like 30, 40 years ago, this. Yeah. But double yellows there, you just destroyed it. Why it's too busy, blah, blah. It was massive, it was a big road, big, wide enough for... It's not, it's just anyway, that's what they're doing.
But like Oxford, just I mean, taking it down.
I've had a few emails in, from people about the stuff that they're on about doing in Oxford. It says 15-minute city, likely to be brought in back end of 2024. There will be no physical barriers. It will all be done by camera, like many car parks are now. If you live inside the blue outline, which there's a map, but I obviously won't see the map, you will get 100 free passes a year. If you live in Oxfordshire, outside the blue outline, you will get 25 free passes a year. A free pass means you can drive through all the filters as many times as you wish for a day.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks, Communist.
Another thing, Fatty, when you were on about double yellows, it started off doing it to people who wanted to visit the town centre. But now, even if you own an establishment there, you can't get in there to deliver anything to your own business.
Well, you've got 100 passes. It's probably government style, isn't it?
Fucking hell. So, is that a step back from the 15 minutes here, or is that...
No, it's not a step back. It's going to be controlled by ULEZ cameras, isn't it? It's the same principle.
The Blade Runner's out.
The same principle is that they're going to be charging... It's the first time in history, right, that they blatantly don't... Like 2020, they closed everything down. They didn't want your business. No. To stop people doing business. And this is the same thing. They're shutting everybody down. Yeah. This is the first part of, we're going to lock you in and you won't better leave this town. And you know, I found a great video of Aldous Huxley. I'll try and find it, actually, and play some of it. He's talking like in the 60s here about this stuff. And it says here, even without a pass, every part of the city is reachable by car, but it might mean rerouting. So this is all for global climate warming change, apparently. But you'll have to drive 25 miles around, do more mileage, but that's all right. The filters are likely to be brought in late 2024. Marston Ferry Road and Holway filters will operate from Monday to Saturday. So there'll be times when you can come in and out. If you go through a filter or a camera or whatever it is and have used all your passes, you'll get charged 35 quid. Or 70 quid if you take longer than 2 weeks.
Wankers.
Many people will be... I don't know. I think this is on somebody's website. They've got information about what's going to happen. That's,
is it the first place it's happening in Oxford, then? Is that the test site? Is it?
Well, look, that twat in...
over than London, I mean. Yeah, but London's always a place unto itself, isn't it? I mean, is this the first... city outside of London. I would imagine. I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know they're trying it in Cambridge as well, by the way. Yeah. So I've seen protests in town for it.
Yeah. I'm going to play this while we're on this subject, just to close this section off before we get on to some other stuff. I'm going to play this video that I've been going to put onto one of, well, I'm going to put it onto one of our Huxley presentations. Huxley 7 was released on Saturday. Really enjoy doing those. It's sort of like a bottomless pit. I know me and Matt Sergio get a lot of mileage on emails out of it. He feeds me and I feed him, I think.
Was it him or you who said you need to get out more?
It was me. I need to get out more, but he probably thinks the same as well. But the thing is, right, like you'll be saying when you're doing a sculpture and you think you've found something you really enjoy, you get into like the zone, don't you?
Yeah.
And when you find information out about someone, and it's like you're digging and you find a seam and you can't stop finding new bits of information. It might only be new to me and other people might know about it, but what happens is then it links into something else. And it can't just happen by chance, that link. But anyway, I'll play this this video.
In your Brave New World Revisited, which was published about 2 years ago, you did claim that much of what you forecast had come true. I mean, for example, the use of drugs and this instance of people having their thoughts directed while they're asleep through music being played or messages being played through their pillows and so on. I mean, in which societies do you think that most of what you forecast has mostly come true? I mean, is it in America, Britain, Russia, China?
Well, it seems to me this is not so much, you can't say that it's a question of national peculiarities or even entirely of political peculiarities. I mean, I think when the technological and applied scientific means are developed, they just tend to be used. I mean, I think one can say that the whole history of recent times in relation to science and technology shows that if you plant the seed of applied science or technology, it proceeds to grow, and it grows according to the laws of its own being. And the laws of its being are not necessarily the same as the laws of our being. I mean, hence this sense of which so many people have, and which I think one sees in so many societies, this sense that man is being subjected to his own inventions, that he is now the victim of his own technology and the victim of his own applied science, instead of being in control of it.
How could he be in control of it?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, I think that this is perhaps one of the major problems of our time. How do we make use of this thing? I mean, after all, this was stated in the Gospel. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And in the same way, technology was made for man and not man for technology. But unfortunately, the development of recent social and scientific history has created a world in which man seems to be made for technology rather than the other way around. And we have to start thinking about this problem very seriously and seeing how we can re-establish control over our own inventions.
But would you say then that America or Britain was as liable to suffer from the arts of mass persuasion or brainwashing, say, as dictatorial societies?
Well, at the moment, fortunately, we have in both these countries a considerable constitutional tradition which puts a brake on these kind of activities. For example, one of the ablest writers, it seems to me, on sociological problems is the French writer Professor Ellul, who views the difference between the totalitarian, the Russian totalitarian, and the Western civilizations as being essentially a difference in the readiness to make use of technology immediately and to the limit. I mean, Engels from the first asserted that socialism would come through the use of technology to the limit.
I'll pause it there. I've got to say on that bit.
Well, he kind of avoided the question, didn't he?
Yes.
What he was saying was, he totally avoided it. He was saying, with a load of fluff, interesting fluff, but he still fluffed around it. Because he was basically saying, who's more liable to use it, like dictatorships or basically
or democracies.
And he just fucking went off on one, didn't he? Went all over the show. And he even said Russian totalitarianism or the West, whatever, democracies. But I don't know. I mean, look at. Do you know what? I was actually saying this to Mrs. yesterday. If you think of England and we're being propagandized at the moment against Russia, but you've got Russia, which is bigger than England and America and whatever, and they're propagandized against the West. Someone's got to be right. Someone hasn't got to be right. They're either one of them's right or they're in cahoots pretending that it's a conflict.
Oh, the two bullies.
Oh, they're just two sets of egomaniacs.
Just different control groups.
Yeah.
I don't get is, right, that China's apparently the enemy because they're friends with Russia. Yeah, probably 90% of our goods come from China. How does that work?
My missus pointed something out for interesting. When that thing happened, I didn't really go look into that thing in Russia where that didn't, a lot of people...
No, I didn't either, there. Yeah.
But Lou was saying on the news it showed like Putin writing a candle. So then it's sympathy for Putin and Russia all of a sudden after being told to hate them for the last 2 years. And I said, but Lou, that's exactly what they want, pure confusion. So you're watching it as an old
chaos.
You're like, but why the fuck? Why are we feeling sorry for Putin and Russia all of a sudden when all we've done is lambast them for the last 2 or 3 years? And now we've got, and I said, because it's confusion. It's pure
same
confusion.
Same news groups, everything.
Yeah.
Let's just listen to a bit more on this.
And the Russian regime has always been prepared to follow out the logic of technology. Whereas in the West, we still remember John Stuart Mill, James Mill, Jefferson, and so on. We still remember vaguely the precepts of Christianity. And we are a little reluctant to embark upon technology, to allow technology to take over. In the long run, we generally succumb. I mean, I'm reminded in this context of the line in Byron's Don Juan about this lady who, vowing she would ne'er consent, consented. And in the long run, we generally do consent. I mean, but in the short run, we sort of higgle-haggle about it, and we are reluctant to, but we tend to be pushed by the advancing technology in a certain direction, which I don't find desirable. And I do think we have to start thinking very intensively about this problem and seeing how we can get control again of our invention. I mean, this is the kind of Frankenstein monster.
What invention is he talking about here? I mean, it's only part of an interview here, you know that.
Do you know that what struck me when we listened to him is it reminds me of Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
A load of word salad.
He looks a bit like him as well, actually.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like him.
He's obviously intelligent, right?
Yeah.
But he's just talking. And there's no meat and potatoes to where he's just talking, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is it me or am I wrong for that?
No, that's right. I think as well, it's very...
He seems
fluffy.
Intelligent, but it's just firing words out.
Yeah. He's delivering a message, isn't he? Mm. He's written books on dystopia. I mean, you've written the revisited one, read the revisited one, haven't you?
I haven't read it all, actually, no. Right. I'm going to read it all for our for the Huxley stuff we're doing.
Yeah. But, so the technology is here now, apparently. But you were talking about technology... I mean, this was 60, 70 years ago. And he's talking about technology being there then. And we mentioned, remember the psychophone and stuff like that? That guy was saying, you know, can the mind control your brain, wash you through your pillow? Mm. What were he talking about there? You know? Interesting stuff. All right, we'll move on. I can listen to that.
It reminds me of John Peterson and that Yuval Harari guy.
They're
smart people, and they just talk. And I don't know.
Telling you anything either.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. They're not saying anything.
You could actually watch Hollywood and know more about it than listen to them.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood's telling you more information about what's going to happen to you. They're turning everybody into Barbie and Ken. The using Black Mirror. What I'm trying to say is, I tell you what I watched the other day, the new, and I don't normally watch films, but I watched Hunger Games, the new one.
All right. Is any good?
Well, yeah, it's all right. I've never watched an Hunger Games, to be honest with you. I'd watched it. It is very similar because the guy starts out. What the portrait? It's the prequel. So yeah. It's meant to be the young Donald Sutherland.
Right.
Yeah. And he's that, like Donald Sutherland in The Hunger Games, although I haven't watched it, I know he's the evil bastard.
I know, yeah. David Icke always points out that that's where it was heading, the Hunger Games Society, and you can kind of see that, can't you?
You can see it. But he starts out nice. He starts out trying to save people.
But again, is that making the devil's good kind of character?
Yeah, this is what I'm trying
just
to say.
Just for some mishap, he ends up evil.
Yes, yeah.
They've done it with so many, haven't they? Even with... What's it called? 101 Dalmatians woman. They made her into like an anti-hero.
Yeah, Cruella Deville.
You're talking about a woman who wants to kill and skin 101 children. Dalmatians.
And dogs. Yeah, and willing to kill children for it.
Yeah. How can the backstory be that she was all right in the beginning and then turned bad?
Yeah, she was a nice lass, yeah. But then...
But you see this more and more. We've discussed this before. The anti-hero thing where the anti-hero is actually pure evil. I mean, they did it with a joke.
And not only that means then that their behaviour's all right.
Yeah,
their behaviour's fine because
more brainwashing. Yeah.
You think they screwed them over when they were young, so their behaviour's all right.
It's justified. Justified to have no morals. Look at the Joker film, which I think was doing a lot of things. That one with Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, I went and saw that. I quite enjoyed it. Whatever. But then when you go away and you start thinking about it, I remember going to work and saying to a lad at work, a really nice lad, you know, and this is going back a few years when they were on about, you know, my mental state and my mental health and all this. And I said to him, have you seen the new Joker film? He said, yeah, sorry, it opened up a few things in my mind that did, to be fair. So he'd related to it. He'd related to that character.
They're now tapping in on, going back to your data, the data collection, they're now probably writing scripts about the data from the data collection that then taps into them individuals that they think, individual then thinks that film could have been written for
really
them.
Really taps right into me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. How many people said that about a film? Maybe
you've got people at that point discussing their own personal mental health, and then you've got a film which is literally about mental health.
And who were pushing mental health thing? We all in footballers, Prince William, who had the biggest again. He had that traumatic event played out on TV. And look what's happening now.
But again,
videos that they're releasing.
Just to skip sideways. Like we've discussed before, is that part of the rule? He knows what happened, but in their world, in their unique, twisted upside down world, they're not allowed to mention that bit.
Which is maybe, well, who knows? But Prince Harry and people like that. But again, it's like Bill Hicks, isn't it? When the president comes in and says, "I'm going to do this," that, and then they take him downstairs and show him the real Zapruder film.
But just quickly, just to mention the Kate thing, Middleton thing. Isn't it interesting, right? Because I got mentioned that by someone at work. I'd never thought about it at all. We realised that she's been missing since Christmas. And then I started talking to you about it, and then we've probably mentioned it on it. And then it became, you know, it was kind of a news thing. So whatever you think of that, then you had these fake videos, and you had that last one that she brought out where he was saying that she got cancer. And people have looked at that and it's fake. Clearly, the ring, you know, whatever, I'm not going to go into it, but things vanish and etc.
Whether the ring vanishes or it's... Right, let's just say the ring...
My point was... we get caught up in this shit, don't we? But my point was...
But it's interesting though, Chris, because you've seen Mirror World, haven't you? You've seen Mirror World.
It is interesting. But my point is I got mentioned that to me by someone at work, right? And then we discussed it. And then that last one where she was saying...
So hang on a minute, let's get this right. So somebody at work brought up that the picture basically were a corrupt picture.
Before that, someone at work brought up to me, a guy I really like who I work with regularly, brought up with me that she'd been missing since Christmas. I'd never even thought about it. And that was going back a while. And then I started to think, oh, bloody hell. That is weird. And then, you know, and then it became a news thing, didn't it? And it became a conspiratorial thing, et cetera, et cetera. And then going right up to, so people were talking about it at work, basically. We went into the mainstream news feed, if you like. But then when she released the last one saying that she got the big C, I went into work and said, oh, so what do you think? Are the, the movement in the Middleton story, that she's got the big C. And the same fella who told me about it, or the same people who mentioned it, starts saying, "Oh, I don't want to talk about that now because, you know, she's got kids and blah, blah, blah." So, and I immediately thought that must be in the news feed.
Yes.
The fact that they're saying it's a conspiracy thing, she's got children, you know, leave her alone, she's got cancer, etc. And they're just taking it on. So they were actually on the verge of talking conspiratorial. Then all of a sudden changed and went, "No, we can't talk about that now because..."
Maybe they can brainwash him through the pillows then. Because, I mean, that's some about...
That's right, exactly. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm going very long-winded.
That's some about turn, that, isn't it? Because when you think about it, right, that whole thing, right, let's just say, right, she's released that picture, then she's come out and said, "Yeah, I did Photoshop it all, really, it wasn't me there, and blah, 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 blah."
Then bring another one.
Anything after that, you can't believe, right? No. Anything after that, you cannot believe. You're a liar. Because you've just now conned, spelled, millions and millions of people who, for some reason, adore you, right?
Yeah.
And now you're conning them again with a video.
Yeah.
And now you're telling them they can't talk about that, though, because otherwise
they're
evil.
Choosing not to talk about it because you've mentioned the big C. So
that is how they got away with 2020, isn't it?
Banging, they're tapping into your humanity. They're tapping into your basic humanity, which is...
That is the Ash Conformity study, in a nutshell, right there.
Yeah. They're telling you...
That line's bigger than that one.
Because she's got an illness and it's inhumane for you to talk about it. So people just go, "Right, okay, I'm off. I'm not talking about it."
Or when they're...
Whereas us nut jobs, we'll keep talking about it. We don't care how many people have supposedly died or whatever's happened. Yeah. We'll fucking keep talking about it because that has to be talked about. You won't be scared off by the fact that, oh, God. Well, I mean, it taps into that same mentality. You might kill grandma, doesn't it, basically?
Yes. Well, again, but it's like that woman going into that doctor's surgery and that noise coming, that beep coming on, and everyone's standing up. And after three beeps, she stands up, right? And then all the original people have left, and she's still there. Yeah, and some new people come in, and she's still standing up. Yeah,
it's brilliant.
It's Mousetopia, isn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody Ed goes on about Mousetopia, and somebody reminded me about that. Actually,
yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
Interesting study, that, isn't it? Mousetopia.
Yeah. I remember reading years ago that even that's why people in cities, it probably is from the Mousetopia thing, but that's why, I'll tell you what it was. No, it was Desmond Morris. Do you remember Desmond Morris?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he used to do those man watching shows. I've got one of his books.
Yeah, but he did. Yeah.
And it was literally, they came to the conclusion. For instance, if you fall down in the street in London, most people are going to walk past you. If you do it in Huddersfield, say, where we grew up, or Somerset or something, and you fall over, everyone around will come to your aid. And it is literally the fact that the closer beings or mice or humans are together, the more stressed they become. And they start acting weirder and crazier, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why people in cities, no matter where you go in the world, people in the biggest city are always a bit colder. And you're more likely to get ripped off, or you're more likely, you know, they won't say hello or be nice to you. Because the closer people are into your proximity, the more stressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether you're a mouse or a person.
Yeah, what would he call? Behavioural sink or something like that, wasn't it? Where he uses a specific type of rat. I'm going to do something on that, actually. I'm going to do something on that.
Type of rat?
A Norwegian rat or something like that, Chris. It was a specific type of rat.
Right.
Because it was more domesticated.
Mm.
So how do they know that particular type of rat's more domesticated than... Or more likely, but even down to the point though that those rats were turning like homosexual and stuff like that.
Well, they went from there was a peak, wasn't there, where they put all these rats in the thing, and there was a peak where everything started got better, and then when it got to a certain point, it started to decline, and they got greedy and selfish and
started killing each other,
each other and stuff. Yeah. It's like that place in...
They did the same with monkeys. I remember doing it. I'm sure it was in Japan.
I was just going to say that because there's a place in... One of my mates were talking to about this, and he was saying he'd seen this documentary about monkeys. And I've been there. It's called Monkey Island in Thailand. And all the monkeys are fat. And what they've learned to do is, instead of taking your food, they'll take your phone and then trade your phone for some food. Right, went there and they're nasty, they're all fat as well.
Horrible.
The cat,
same in Gibraltar, isn't it? Same in Gibraltar,
mean spirited.
Them monkeys at top of mountain, same there as well.
And if you've got food on you, they're like hissing at you. So their new food source is relying on humans to give them a donut or whatever. Interesting.
Insane. You can't make this stuff up. But going back to that that Kate video there, right, or the picture, right, these people are, even if it is a or not, and some people have analysed the video and said a mouth moves odd and there's parts missing out.
A ring vanishes, but, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that there's somebody did something on that where could that be could be pixel, the yeah. fact that, yeah, the pixelation of it.
Yeah, but I mean...
But even if that's the case, right, if that is the case, why are they using 15 or 20-year-old cameras?
Yeah. Why are we choosing to make excuses for someone?
But even if it is the pixels, right? Let's just say it's the pixels.
Yeah.
Why would they use a 15, 20-year-old camera? I mean, I'm not
into cameras. You struggle to find one.
Even with your iPhone, it doesn't do that. If you film something on your iPhone, and I'm shit with taking pictures and stuff like that.
Well, a camera like they're describing, you would struggle to find, put it that way.
Yes. Well, you could find them if you really wanted, but
yeah, but you mean it's not. You know what I mean? It's not.
Are they putting that in there so people talk about it? And then they can say you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, I think everything's a distraction these days. Yeah. I don't know. I think films, stuff like this. I think they're designed.
Well, I think we're doing some.
Maybe they're rounding those mad bastards up.
Well, I don't think so. Dogs. Mentally rounding everybody up. I think, but I also think that I was doing some research, I don't know how I got to John Wayne. Sometimes you go down these tracks and he could come. But we're doing some research on Masonic stuff, and I'll get to why we're doing that further on in this podcast. But and I came across John Wayne, or the Duke, as he was called. He apparently called it after his terrier, his dog that he used to walk, which he called Duke.
And Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into that at some point as well. not today, but some other point. I was reading on his Wikipedia page, right, that, and it didn't mention the next bit that I'm going to say on his Wikipedia page, funnily enough, but this is what it says about his death. Although he enrolled in a cancer vaccine study in an attempt to ward off the disease, Wayne died of stomach cancer on June 11th, 1979, at UCLA Medical Center. He was buried at Pacific View Memorial Park, in Corona Del Mar.
Right.
Now, so in the 70s, right, I don't know, I didn't look at how old he was when he, it just said he enrolled in a vaccine study. Right. So, I mean, this mRNA stuff and what have you has been going on a heck of a long time, unless that's just been placed there to make it look like it has. Some kind of Mandela effect type situation or just lie. But then he dies of it. Which is a nip the wrong. But when I looked into his life, John Wayne, the Freemason, and John Wayne wasn't his real name either. It was called Morrison.
Called Alice or something, wasn't it?
It was Marion or something like that. Yeah. Marion Morrison or something. He wasn't called Marion, I don't think. But
nobody had he had a girl's name, basically. Yeah, I think it was Alice,
Right. I don't think it was Alice, but look it up. I think it was Marion or something. Anyway, but he was a Freemason. And he was this is what it said on a Freemason site. And so this is a Mason site that, and they're quite open about putting this stuff out there as well, strangely. I find it odd. I expect everything to be hidden, but, and it's got a picture of him. It's on the Scottish Rites, Scottish Rite, NMJ.org. And it goes through his life, on here. And it shows a picture of him there. Chris can see that with his Mason's hat on.
What are those Moroccan hats called for?
Yeah, I don't know what Fez.
Fez, that's it.
Yeah. He was drawn into fraternal organisations throughout his life. So even through college and whatever he did, he was into like them Omega Kappa type organisations there. And growing up, he was a member of the Glendae Molly chapter. And belonged to the Trojan Knights and Sigma Chi fraternity at the University of California. Later in life, he followed in the footsteps of his father and became a Freemason in 1970. He would come to relish the time he spent among his brothers, remarking that he felt at home in the lodge as if his fame melted away. John Wayne's Masonic Lodge was Marion McDaniel Lodge, number 56. That's probably where I got Marion from, actually. It probably won't call Marion. Tucson, Arizona. Soon after earning his degrees, he became a member of the York Rite and joined the Al Malakia shrine temple in Los Angeles as a 32-degree Mason.
All right, so right up there.
Yeah. So all these people and it's some work I'm doing sort of behind the scenes in bloodlines and Masonic links.
One thing I do know about John Wayne is he dodged the draft, and while everyone else went to World War II, he became famous working in World War II films to an extent where
it was it was embarrassing, wasn't it?
They use one of his films to train Marines, which I mean is ridiculous, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he became famous while everyone else was called up, and maybe his Masonic links explains it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I came across these websites. You do come across them, and they're right in front of you, all this stuff, a lot of it. Just having the patience to dig through it, and it destroyed some of mine and Chris's black heroes. I mean, they point these heroes to look up to, and they always say, you need an hero. You know, where have young men got an hero now? You know, not a father figure and all this type of nonsense, right? Mm. And this is what you come across. So John Wayne, who you've watched killing Indians countless times, is a 32-degree Mason, right? Yeah.
Selling the cowboy story.
Selling the Marines, whatever you want to call it. He was, you can't tell me he were a good actor. I'm not buying it, I'm sorry. I am not buying that he was a good actor, because he played the same person with the same voice in every film you've seen, ever.
Yeah, but I mean, in defence, some of these people that do play the same part, like him, Schwarzenegger, Stallone.
Wanks.
They do have some presence, but again, I'm not defending these fuckers, because anyone could probably have that presence
if they were trained, Chris.
Trained anybody. And pushed through it, exactly.
You know, again, you're talking to people, right? Even at a low level professional sports person, let's just say you play football at a professional football club, they're all trained on how to talk to media, what not to say, how to get yourself out of it, and all this type of stuff. And it'll take them years to train. Imagine if you're a guitarist and you put with the best guitar teacher or a drummer or an actor and you taught every day. I mean, even Vinnie Jones looks like a good actor now. Yeah. you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't do too bad. Yeah.
He didn't do too bad at all, no. Yeah. And so,
well, it's a thousand-hour thing, isn't it?
Thousand-hour thing. And some people are better than others, obviously. Some people have got a natural talent at certain things. Mm. But you can get better at stuff if you put the time
100%,
in.
100%, yeah.
I mean, I'm putting together a new Matrix video over a period of time, and I saw a video, I'm putting some stuff together about California, you know, about all this, because that, going back to 15-minute cities, that's a state, but how they're just destroying that with fires and fentanyl and
homelessness,
lockdowns and homelessness, all these things. And you look at it, and then I found a video of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm going to play that as well. I found a video of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it looks totally, it looks like Terminator, but he's doing the old, we'll come back to this, what we're talking about. He's doing the old advert for being governor of California.
Well, he...
Go on.
No, I'm going to say, well, he someone sent me the other day, I think it was Sue Hughes who sent him a... He's actually he's in hospital with having a heart bypass.
Yeah, well, he's had heart problems before. But I mean,
but you can't help but remember, you know, screw your freedoms.
Oh, yeah. Screw your freedom.
He was slagging off the anti-jib jabbers and screw your freedoms. I think he apologized, though, but you've got a lot of responsibility when you've got a voice like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You can't go around saying screw your freedom, stay at home.
I'm sorry, right? He was governor of California, he's got some level of intelligence. He knows what's going on behind the scenes.
Hang on a minute, just rewind that. He was governor of California. He has some level of intelligence.
Well, there's Governor Newsom. He looks thick as shit, doesn't he? he looks like, again, like Trudeau. And when we did that Trudeau one, I put two pictures of what they call it, Christian Bale. And Trudeau, and they looked exactly the same characters. And that Gavin Newsom has that same look. Same look. What do you call that film? American Psycho.
Yeah, American Psycho.
I'll just play this Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like Terminator going for governor of California.
We did.
This was 2002.
This historic election has come about because there's a tremendous disconnect between the people of California and the leaders of California. We the people are doing our job, working hard, raising our families and paying taxes, but the politicians are not doing their job. We can do better than that. After all, we are California, always at the forefront of innovation. Our farm products feed the world, and our technology is second to none. I'm running for governor to lead a movement for change and give California back its future. I stand for fiscally responsible government, rebuilding California's economic engine, putting the needs of children first, and reforming our political system so that the public interest comes before special interests. I want to be the people's governor. I will work honestly, without fear or favor, to do what is right for all Californians.
Join Arnold and let's bring California back.
You can't even fucking say it.
California.
California.
I mean, do you have music in background? If you're buying that shit, I mean, come on.
That was 2002. You're saying it with a smile. We the people. No, you aren't the people.
I wonder how many takes that took to get.
I don't know, but. It says California exactly the same every time. You know, every single time.
Can't it is say like, it.
California. You know, like
where did Pepper Car fire?
Expects him to have a cigar and a black leather jacket on.
I know.
Screw your freedom. Yeah. Jesus.
How did people fall for that bullshit?
I don't know.
He won as well. He got in.
He won. I think he won two terms. He won two. And not only that, Chris, right? He won two terms and that three strikes and you're out. So if they caught somebody with a spliff, that were it. We were in for life, right? Yeah. And yet he would inject steroids into him while they were doing bodybuilding shows. Yeah. And if he got caught doing steroids,
injected steroids into his knackers because he had no veins left.
They only need an ass cheek.
When they're doing that three strike thing, I mean, that is just. I
know.
Insane.
It's still going now, you know.
Is it still going?
I think it's still going now.
Who dreamt that shit up?
Well, I tell you who dreamt that shit up. A governor of California who got a backhander from prison companies.
Yeah.
Oh, right. We've only got 50,000 prisoners. How do we get 2 million?
We need 100,000 by 20, whatever.
We turn them into fentanyl addicts, crackheads, and we do three strikes and you're out. Because that'll work. That'll stop them doing it, won't it?
Yeah.
That'll stop somebody with nothing who's a crackhead stealing again.
Give them a prison deterrent.
Yeah. Yeah. Three strikes and you're out. All right. Well, I've only nicked two big razors and some Lynx Africa.
Yeah.
But if I murder somebody, I get life anyway. So I don't like him. Fuck it.
Might as well go full hog.
Might as well go full out.
Go for gold.
Recently, I came across a list. Anyway, going back to what I was saying, this is how we talk with Mark about this. How you just destroy your heroes, don't we, Mark Devlin?
I'm shaking my head as I look at this. I saw the email.
Yeah. I recently came across a list of official US Masonic which is an official US Masonic website, and gave names of famous people from gone by and black entertainers who were very prominent Masons, boxers like Jack Johnson. I mean, Chris, you weren't into sport, but Jack Johnson to me was the first black heavyweight boxer. He started the revolution where he was chasing white guys round the world because they didn't want to fight him.
Right.
I've heard of
the next one, Sugar Ray Robinson. Only from the film Raging Bull, actually.
And Sugar Ray Robinson was another one. The story goes that he never went in a lift. He always used to run upstairs because he was that fit, even when he was retired and stuff like that. Jazz men like Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong. I mean, that hurt me. Louis Armstrong hurt me. It hurt me.
I still listen to Louis Armstrong.
That velvet voice. And I think to myself.
I listen to him at work still now. Lovely Louis Armstrong.
And he was at the Montgomery Lodge, number 18, New York. Nat King Cole. He was at the Waller Lodge, number 14. My dad used to
loved Nat King Cole, didn't
he? Yeah, he did, yeah. And I'd never heard of this guy, William Count Basie.
Count Basie Jr.
That's weird. Weird how you're named differently.
Well, because you've got it written there as William. Count Basie.
Dickhead. And Richard Pryor.
Right.
Richard Pryor at the Lodge number 22 in Illinois.
One of the only, I've ever read, autobiographies was Richard Pryor's.
Right. The reason we got onto this was because Mark sent me a. What they call it, Cox, the DJ.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Cox, I keep thinking of Brian Cox. But And I basically said that, Carl Cox, would it surprise you if these people were either Masons there? And also, I came across, when we were doing this research, so it's not all one way, you know, we're not looking at it from a black or white thing. It's whatever the evidence shows you.
Well, there's no countries fight, I don't think there is a black and white.
No, no, there isn't, no. But there's also a black elite. I mean, Obama's a prime example of that black elite with that bloodline going back to British royalty, whose bloodlines come from either political or economic or even royal bloodlines. That's made up of people who are African descent. In the Western world, it's typically distinct from other national elites, but I think that boundary is getting rubbed out personally. In fact, I think it's a good way of hiding behind the bloodline. Yeah. That's what I think.
Well, the black-white thing. The black-white.
Yeah, because if it's a white person, that you know, they're in power, that's because they're white, yeah? But you get a black person in power, everyone thinks, well...
Well, Obama, I mean, I'll be honest with you, when Obama got in America, I, again, being a human, hoping for the best... I remember actually talking to you and you said it's bullshit, but at that time I still had a glimmer of hope or clinging on to it. Because you remember he said he was going to get rid of Guantanamo Bay because he was wrong.
He didn't do that.
He didn't do anything he said. No. And I remember bringing it up with people and going, you know, I had
that when he was in that limo with that guy.
Getting blown off.
ordering a drone attack while he's having a nosh.
do you remember that footage of him saying... someone said, well, you know, future, and he said, something like that, what do you see in the future? He said, drone attacks. And everyone started laughing, and he said, I'm serious. Do you remember that? And also, how funny when you think that it was Trump who brought up the fact that he was born in, do you remember that all, he wasn't born in America, kind of? That was put in front of us, that was.
It was there, laid out, wasn't it? Yeah. Laid out. Whether he didn't have a passport, it's irrelevant.
But why was it in the news feed? It was definitely put out on purpose, wasn't it? Because then certainly you had Trump going on about it. And blah,
a royal
blah, blah.
Bloodline, like Trump has, Trumpet has. I think he's more from a Scandinavian side. But what got me is that, you know, these upper class people that a lot of them come from the slave owner class, the plantation class that went from UK to America during Revolution or the colonial times in the Caribbean, and the plantation owners bred or slept with and had children with black women on the plantation.
Well, it's creating
they
that
took
bastard,
them as mistresses.
Bastard bloodline that we've talked about before. Yeah.
That then going back, and some of the people that I pull one out. A black elite bloodline example, a good one, is tennis star Arthur Ashe, who was the first black person to win Wimbledon.
I can't claim that.
I can't either. But he was also the poster boy for AIDS. He died of AIDS.
All right.
In the 90s. And it was like a big thing.
Who died of AIDS.
I think it was from a blood transfusion.
Right, the only famous people died of AIDS.
Yeah, but his family members were enslaved by a North Carolina governor called Samuel Ashe, and he's obviously Arthur Ashe is a direct descendant of this prominent political bloodline.
Right.
Another one being, and I'd never heard of this woman, I'll have to ask Mrs. because she's into fashion, is fashion model and actress, I'll hopefully get this right, Adowa, spelled A-D-W-O-A, Caitlin Maria Aboa. She was voted Model of the Year for 2017 by models.com. She was born in Westminster, London, to Charles Aboa and Camilla Lowther, OBE, daughter of the second son of Anthony Lowther, or Viscount Lowther, who was the eldest son of Lancelot Lowther, 6th Earl of Lonsdale.
Who's born in Westminster?
That lady there, Maria.
No, I'm saying, I mean, who's born in Westminster? You know what I mean? That's like, no one lives there, do they?
Well, anyway, it's like Mayfair, isn't it? But, and her sister's also a model as well. And also, her white cousin's also a model. I forget what her white cousin was called now. But her sister started up during She's an artist as well, sorry, her sister, as well as being a model. And she's an actress and a model, is her older sister. But during 91 Divock, Eboa, that first lady, started up a hashtag Creative Together initiative with the hope of creating a way to connect people to combat anxiety and mental health surrounding lockdown. Right. She's apparently been in like the Priory type thing, not the Priory, but tried committing suicide and all this. Model who had everything, you know, all that. So she'd model for all these
she's
massive...
been hired to do the mental health...
Well, whether she'd been hired or mind-washed, or whatever it is, these people are suffering some of these problems. Mm. And she shouldn't be suffering these problems. But what I'm trying to say is there's so many families like that that you wouldn't... She's now called Adoa Caitlin Maria Eboa. You wouldn't put her with Lancelot Lowe, the 6th Earl of Lonsdale, would you? The Black Lady. You know what I mean? There's no way on the face of it, you saw her in a magazine, you would think she was the granddaughter of the Earl of Lonsdale.
No, you'd have thought she were like a ground roots medic, you know, got spotted in a shopping...
Exactly, apparently, like Kate Moss or something like that. Yeah. But her father as well, his ancestry in Africa, I forget, is it Nigeria? Anyway, or Kenya. They're a political family as well. His uncle were a statesman and all the... That, so, anyway. Now, here, look, you've got to have a job somewhere, right? Mm. And nepotism's an odd thing because there are different levels of nepotism, aren't there? For instance, if you worked in a kitchen and your young'un wanted a job,
you'd
make
job.
Sure he got a job. That's a similar sort of process. That's nepotism at end of day, whether we like it or not, right? Mm. But this has got... A totally different feel to it, this, because these people are starting things up like, you know, they're doing a creative thing, you know what I mean? That changes people's ways of life.
You're getting your Seb a job
cooking burgers, for argument's sake, ain't changing the way society is it?
No. Well, you're not getting them a job, you're getting them to fill a role, is what you're doing.
Yes.
Different, isn't it?
Because
you know you can influence them and direct them in the way that you want them to be. But then look at the P. Diddy bullshit going on at the minute, Fire. Mm. I mean, I don't want to go into that because I
haven't read enough about it. I've only heard what Mark said about it, to be honest with you.
But on the surface, you're looking at possibly a,
an operation, isn't it?
Yeah, another sting operation, basically.
Yeah. P. Diddy's dad, wasn't he a drug dealer?
I don't know anything.
Yeah, I've never liked that guy. Gangster. No,
thought he was shy.
Well, again, I thought he was just bobbins, wasn't he?
Never thought anything of him.
No. I wanted to go through this before we finish. What time are we on? We've got 10 minutes to go through this.
Yeah.
I want to go through this bridge.
I've got 10 minutes. My child is still awake. I can hear her upstairs.
Yeah, school always. That bridge you sent me through, right, it reminded me of that bridge from Blade Runner 2 when it was sort of cut in half. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Right.
It's a similar sort of looking bridge, wasn't it? Idea. Red sky and stuff like that. So the Francis Scott Key Bridge, a.k.a. the Key Bridge, opened in March 23rd.
You started in the middle of a story, if I...
Yeah. No, I sort of am. I'm going to come to it here, right? But we're talking about the bridge where the container ship ran into. But it opened on March 23rd, 1977, 47 years ago, and collapsed because it on March 26, 2024. So more or less bang on the date that it opened, it got smashed into.
Well, that's a theme that you see a lot in this crazy world we're in, don't you?
Yeah. Listen to this. Baltimore engineering firm J.E. Griner and Company was selected as primary design consultant, founded in 1908 by John Edwin Griner. In 1995, the firm was acquired by URS Corporation, now part of Ecom. URS Corporation, formerly United Research Services, was an engineering design and construction firm and a U.S. federal government contractor. Before URS sold its HQ, before URS was sold, its HQ was the Transamerica Pyramid. You should see the size of it. And some corporations that run out of that, insane. A 48-story modernist skyscraper in San Francisco, the second tallest building in San Francisco, or it was. A four-sided pyramid with two wings.
Right.
So the Key Bridge construction was performed by John F. Beasley Construction Company with material fabricated by Pittsburgh De Monet Steel Company. The Pittsburgh De Monet Steel Company, originally the De Monet Bridge and Iron Company, operated from 1892 until 2002. The company also fabricated the forked columns of the World Trade Centers.
Right. two mysterious collapses in one.
Yeah, I actually said out loud when I found that, no fucking way.
So they're the go-to people if you want your building to fall down in 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, what are the odds on the same company building to fabricate a structure?
Whenever I think of Baltimore, I think of, I don't know if anyone's heard Snow. The... No, I think of Nina Simone song, Baltimore. Have you heard that song better?
No, yeah. If anyone, probably I'm Mason as well.
Oh, Baltimore. What a great tune. Haunted
she were probably, yeah.
Oh, God.
Aretha Franklin.
Yeah. Anyone's up for grabs.
Yeah, everyone's
take
up
them all.
Grabs. Take them all, yeah. The story goes that while the bridge was still being built, it was named in 1976 to honour Francis Scott Key, the author of The Defence of Fort McHenry, which was a poem. And the poem is based upon the American national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner. Key was inspired to write the poem after witnessing the bombardment of Fort McHenry during the Battle of Baltimore in September 1814. Key had been aboard an American truce ship. So this was during the America-Britain War. American truce ship with the British Royal Navy fleet in Baltimore Harbor near Solace Point. The approximate location is, why did it say this? 100 yards, which is 91 meters.
One and nine.
Yeah. Of the bridge and is marked, that actual spot, 100 yards, 91 meters, is marked by a buoy or a buoy in the colors of the US flag.
Mad.
Yeah. So this guy, Key, Francis Key, along with Colonel John Stuart Skinner, dined aboard HMS Tonnant, a British battleship, on 7th September 1814, following the burning of Washington in August. They were the guests of Vice Admiral Alex Cochrane and Rear Admiral George Cockburn, two cocks, and Major General Robert
Cockend.
Ross. He took it from both of them.
liked everyone.
Skinner and Key, he had the key to their cocks, were there to plead for the release of Dr. William Beans, an elderly resident of Upper Marlboro, Maryland, and a friend of Key, who had been captured in his home on August 28th. So, what we're led to believe is that them two went on a truce ship because of an old guy. Bear in mind, there's a war going on. And the admiral said, stop the war, let this truce ship through. We're going to have dinner with them. And they're trying to get out this old doctor, who's probably half dead anyway because we've been bombing shit out of them. And that's what we're led to believe. Anyway, he wrote the Star-Spangled Banner on the back of that war. That's how it was meant to have taken out. He's also got another bridge named after him across the Potomac River in Washington. On March 26, 2024, the northeastern approach of the bridge was destroyed when a container ship, the MV Dali, crashed into one of its piers. So I looked at Salvador Dali. He's got a right name. Salvador Domingo Felipe Jacinto Dali y Dominich, Marquis of Dali to his friends, a.k.a. Salvador Dali. You sent me a painting he did, which I think has been all over. I don't think it, you just sent it.
Yeah.
The Broken Bridge and the Dream.
Yeah.
By the way, Salvador Dali was given the Knight's Grand Cross of the Order of Isabella the Catholic and the Knight Grand Cross of the Order of King Charles III of Spain and was created the first Marquis of Dali and Pubol by King Juan Carlos. Yeah. A bit of an hitter, his old...
Got all the allocated, didn't
it? Yeah, his old Dali. But that bridge does remind me of, you know, similar sort of setting, in it, of the of that one off Blade Runner 2.
Yeah, bleak looking, except for the red. It's filtered with red there, Blade Runner. Mm. Yeah, I know what you mean there. Yeah, someone sent me that the apparently Dali used to do a thing where he'd hold the key, and then when he fell asleep, he'd drop the key, then he'd wake up in dream state and paint what he saw.
Right. Basically. And the guy was called Francis Key.
No.
What I mean is the guy was called that, though.
Yeah. But it's another key link.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
The person who sent me that. Yeah. So you drop the key, then he'd paint what he saw, and he woke up and painted the bridge.
What about them two guys called Cock?
But it was half a bridge. So
what link does that give us? Anyway, Francis Scott Key was an American lawyer, author, poet from Frederick, Maryland, best known as the author of the national anthem, Star Spangled Banner. It was published within a week with the suggested tune of a popular song, the Anacreon in Heaven. Anacreon was a Greek lyric poet notable for his drinking songs and erotic poems, who sang on his life's devotions, and his life was devoted to the love of boys and women and to song.
Not men, boys.
Boys, yeah, and women. Boys and women. Mm. It's all starting to take a very dark edge to it. The song, with Key's lyrics, became the Star Spangled Banner and slowly gained in popularity as an unofficial anthem, finally achieving official status more than a century later under President Herbert Hoover as the national anthem of the US. Key was the fourth United States attorney for the District of Columbia. Fort McHenry, which is what he wrote it for, is an historical American coastal, you can see the picture there, Chris, pentagonal bastion fort, or otherwise known as
a star fort
on Locust Point. I don't know what that means. Named after James McHenry, born 1753, died 1816, was a Scottish Irish American military surgeon, statesman, and founding father of the US. McHenry was the signer of the US Constitution and a master mason at the Spiritual Lodge number 23, Maryland. At ScottishRights.org, it says that Francis Scott Key, born in 1779, he was born into a wealthy, prestigious family of lawyers, elected officials, and Revolutionary War heroes, as everybody is, you know. Outside his legal and poetry career, it is rumoured that Francis Scott Key was a Masonic brother of the Concordia Lodge number 13 in Maryland. A lot of his friends were... I'm sort of skipping over this now, but many argue that Key was a Masonic brother due to his prestigious profile in town and close affiliation with many known revolutionary figures and members of the fraternity. However, some Freemasons believe in Key's connection after studying the rarely read fourth stanza of his poem that inspired the Star Spangled Banner, Defense of Fort McHenry, which holds similar sentiments as those given in the lecture of the one degree and was published in several Masonic papers. And it goes like this: O thus be ever when free man shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause is just. And this is our motto: in God is our trust, and the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
A beautiful poet voice, that.
Yeah. Old-fashioned English and Yorkshire. No.
Your knucklehead voice.
Interestingly, though, on the Grand Lodge of Dakota, ND Masons, NorthDakotaMasons.com, under the sections US Patriots, you'll find Francis Scott Key. There he is.
What is all that about, that bridge fight? What is all that about?
I don't know. But, I mean, when you look at Bridges and Masons. I mean, Bridges and Masons in Shelby Downer's book, I think, and it were Michael Hoffman. So, you know, Crowe's mentioned it loads of times that the bridges are important Masonic, especially these big things. Because sometimes you see two bridges going across the same place and you think, why are they built two bridges there?
Well, you can understand...
A lot to do with ley lines and stuff like that, isn't it?
Well, you can also understand that a bridge maker in the old days, you know, like being a mason, the ability to carve stone, it was a big thing. You know, you can imagine building... I remember when... Do you remember when that Millennium Bridge opened in London, right? And it was, you know, ready to open on the Millennium. And they didn't open it because it wobbled, apparently.
Yeah.
And it made people... And you think... So you're the guy who designed that, right, is a bridge builder. And his job is to build bridges. And he can't build the frigging bridge.
Yeah, they haven't just given me a new
one. Yeah, we've done it since eons ago. Yeah. We've managed to do it. But in the year 2000, was that on purpose that they couldn't build the bridge? The bridge didn't work.
It's odd, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? Was that the beginning, another one of those little, you know, signals to the fact that we're all going, everything's going shitways after 2000?
Yeah,
because it didn't open until like 2002, 2003.
Well, maybe they should have got... The President Philadelphia Experiment Biden, who came out straight away and said the US taxpayer were going to pick up the tab of $1.8 billion to rebuild the bridge.
How does that work?
I don't know how that works, because if a ship runs into a bridge, who do you expect to pay for that?
The ship's insurance company. Definitely, without a doubt. If a ship ran into my house, even though I'm nowhere near any sea, I wouldn't be paying for the house, would I?
No.
You would hope.
Yeah. You'd like to hope not.
And also, rat ears wouldn't turn up and say, we'll pay for it.
No.
Strange. I can't help but think that all this stuff, a lot of this stuff is just, is it distraction? Are they aiming things at us conspiracy nut jobs to get us distracted and talking about it? But how can how can it tie back all those years as well, though?
I know. How does it tie back to American... Like the Star Spangled Banner, for argument's sake, it being a Masonic bridge.
Yeah.
The company that built it had a pyramid. The company that built one of the builders of it was, or the suppliers of it, helped build the trade centers, World Trade Centers. All the wheat checks that Judy Wood talked about,
melting metal.
Yeah, all the wheat checks that Judy Wood talked about. That's basically what they made, isn't it? When she called them wheat checks.
Dissolving metal.
Yeah.
I mean, that. To be fair, that just as an observation, that bridge went down like a sack of shit, didn't it? It didn't...
No.
It just folded.
Yeah. I know. You can't tell me they haven't designed that in the thought that a ship might hit it,
yeah.
Because generally, round those, they've got massive pillars. I've been on cruise ships under, I think it was Lisbon, and it looks like it's only just going to clear under bridge. But round the bridge, there are massive, you know, to stop you running into the bridge, they've built these massive pillars.
Again, fire. Like 9-11, skyscrapers are designed, if a plane hits them, to wobble, withstand
But what happens if four goes off course at the same day? They didn't design it for that, did they?
No, but one plane hit each building. Still went down. That's why you have architects against 9-11, because they're saying we design these things to withstand an earthquake or a plane hitting them.
Yeah, but if a hologram hits it, it's a whole different thing. Different
story. if a laser hologram hits it, it's down.
It's a whole different ball game. Girders melt. It's a whole different ball game, is
dust,
that, mate?
Instant dust.
Yeah. And kickstarts a whole 25 years of bullshit.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, on that note, if you're going to join us in part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.